Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hit the Mark, a podcast presented by CK Magic Sports, who along with Man and Dog Productions, we are the first in sports education.
And welcome to our first edition of the renamed Hit the Mark show that I had started a couple of years ago, back in February of 2016. And I had my own website then, and this was before I joined on with Peter Wiseman, and we created the Rivalry Radio Network. And this is my first attempt at going back to my original Hit the Mark podcast, which was an hour long, and I'm going to restart that tonight, and it's going to be a new show that starts with Major League Baseball. And last week was the first edition, and tonight I'm going to continue it, but under a new name. So I'm looking forward to it. And the theme each week on Thursday night, which is what I'm going to try to do, is going to be Major League Baseball. And last week I had the pleasure of having Lenny Melnick on. And tonight I will have Brian Snow on. And Brian is a guy who most people are familiar with his Snowman in the Morning show. And it looks like Brian is with us. Brian, how are you doing today?
Good evening, sir. How are you?
Great to hear from you again, my friend. So let's not waste any time. Let's just go right into Major League Baseball, because we got a lot to talk about. And let's start with the NL East, all right? Because everyone knows that knows me where my loyalties lie as far as who I root for. And it's been a real hard season so far for fans that root for the team that plays in Flushing, Queens. What is your opinion of that total mess, that tragedy that we're looking at, 7 games under .500? And honestly, Brian, you tell me, I felt like they had absolutely no chance of winning any of those games against Arizona because they were so overmatched. What is your thoughts on this?
Overmatched would be an understatement, and I know this will sound familiar to you. And you wonder why they created Seven Line Army.
Exactly. Right? Tell me about it.
And you wonder why they created Seven Line Army. How far have the Mets fallen since their World Series appearance in 2015? Let's start back there. You know how I do it on my morning show. Got to look in the past first. They were defeated by the Royals in 5 games. They were not competitive last year. They're certainly not competitive this year. You know, yeah, they've had to deal with a few injuries, but there's just no heart with the New York Mets right now. They were overmatched by Arizona. They're going to be overmatched in the NL East. And any time you struggle that long, I mean, yeah, it's a short time, but think about where they were and think about where they are now. It's going to be this way for a while for the Mets unless they find one or two players or one or two situations that can flip that situation around.
Well, I think some of those players that you might be referring to, they have a guy called Amed Rosario at AAA, and he is lighting the place up, hitting over .370. But again, it's hard to really gauge when you're at Vegas because your offensive statistics are going to be overblown and your pitching statistics are going to be overblown and look worse than they are. But you look at the statistics that he's putting up so far at Vegas, and they are very good for a guy who is his first year there. And most people, you would like to keep at AAA for a couple of months. You usually don't have a guy who starts the season, especially a top prospect. You don't have too many of them that start the season at AAA and then are brought up before June 1st. Rosario hit over .365 in 39 games at Las Vegas. He leads the entire organization in hits right now at 57. And right behind him is his buddy at Las Vegas, Dominic Smith, who has 51, who could be another player if the Mets are looking to ignite some offense, which really hasn't been a problem overall, is Dominic Smith. What really has been the problem, and which has been so confusing to the Mets, is going into the season, people pick the Mets as having the best starting staff in baseball. And you look at the numbers.
What in the world?
Well, I mean, before the season started, you looked at the fact that you had Syndergaard, who was a budding superstar and a guy who, you know, consistently hits 99 miles an hour. His ball moves, and he's got a little bit of nastiness to him. So Syndergaard was coming into his own. Then you have Matt Harvey, who, despite the fact that he has not put up consistent numbers for a couple years, still warranted recognition as a guy who could put up a big season. Then you had Jacob deGrom, which has probably been the Mets' most consistent starter for the last three years, including their World Series run. And then you had guys like Bobby Gsellman, who really came on in August and September last year, and along with Seth Lugo, was a huge part of why the Mets made the postseason. And Seth Lugo, a guy who pitched very well in the preseason classic, if you want to call it, or whatever, the tournament, the Major League Baseball, multinational, multilingual, competitive, whatever you want to call it. To me, it's just a big mess. But Seth Lugo pitched very well for Puerto Rico. And a guy that pitched well last year for the Mets who came out of nowhere. And then along with that, you had guys coming back from injuries, which was Zach Wheeler and Steven Matz. Now, you have seven deep right there, okay, of guys who have had success in the major leagues or were highly touted prospects who have had limited success in the major leagues.
Right.
Great success
in
the minor leagues. Okay? So right off the bat, you start with Matz, who is always injured. Matz is always injured and a guy you cannot count on. He goes down in spring training.
Yep.
Then you have the next injury, which is Lugo. He goes down after the baseball class.
Yep.
Then you have the worst case scenario of a guy and the organization not being on the same page, which is Noah Syndergaard, which is the Mets' future. And to me, one of the only pitchers that's going to get a long-term contract, denying to have a MRI to take a look at what's going on with his arm, saying, nah, I don't need it. And the Mets being dumb enough, because the Mets are the Mets, to say, yeah, you're right. We won't push it. We don't want to avoid an injury with you, Noah. You're not the future for us. So we'll just let it go. So he doesn't have the MRI. And sure enough, the next game against the Nationals, getting slapped around, and then he can't pitch anymore because he pulls his lat muscle. He's gone. Can't throw the ball for at least six weeks. Will be gone until August, possibly. Okay? Then you have the fact that Wheeler has, coming off Tommy John surgery, not pitched for 2 years, is on an innings limit, 120 innings limit. He's already at 40 innings. And he's been okay, probably been their second best starter next to DeGrom, but a guy you know you can't count on later in the season. Okay? Then you have the Dark Knight, who has not been the same since his thoracic.
2015.
Since he came out of games five of the World Series and couldn't finish the ninth inning, he has been not the same pitcher. He was horrible last year, 4-10 with an ERA over five. He had the thoracic outlet syndrome surgery. Comes back this year, says he's feeling better than ever. His velocity is up, which he's not, but he says he is. His velocity is still
which
okay.
He's not.
I don't know.
We both know he's not. Mark, I'm a baseball rat. I look at everybody on every team. Matt Harvey has not been the same for 2 years since he came out of the World Series in Game 5 in the ninth inning, an inning he should not have started in the first place. He has not been the same, and he won't be the same until he really gets healed. the same will be said for Syndergaard. So you take a hit with two of your feature pitchers that you were leaning on and counting on to get you a long, long way, and then this happens. It's a mess.
Yeah, I agree it's a mess. But the one thing with Harvey, though, is that you look at him physically, and his velocity is there. I don't know about the movement, but the velocity is there. What's not there is the nastiness. What's not there is the competitiveness and the desire to go out there and get the job done and not settle for what he's allowed so far. It looks like his eyes, his face, his ability to concentrate is off. Like he's not prepared to face these lineups. I don't know whether it's something...
You know what else is not there?
Beforehand?
You know what else is not there? His out pitch, which is usually an off-speed pitch. Everybody's smacking it right now.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I'll agree with the fact that these Met pitchers, whether it's Harvey, whether it's DeGrom, whether it's Wheeler, they run high pitch counts because they cannot put guys away. And consistently, you'll see them get ahead in the network. Get ahead in the count, and then not be able to put the batter away. Which is why the bullpen has been absolutely abused. Jerry Blevins has the most outings, most games in the major leagues so far. The Mets have three guys who have appeared in more than 20 games this year. And we're not even at Memorial Day to give you an idea of how bad the Mets have been this year with keeping their pitchers in a somewhat respectable innings limit. Addison Reed is a guy who has been overused. He's been in 21 games. Fernando Salas has been in 21 games. Josh Edgen has been in 20 games. Hanser Robles has been in 20 games and been an absolute torch. I mean, he's been lit up like a Christmas tree the last couple outings, giving up four homers, 10 RBIs, just getting slapped around. The Diamondbacks, the Brewers, doesn't matter. Addison Reed giving up a grand slam on Sunday. Fernando Salas not being able to get outs. Josh Edgen giving up home runs to left-handed pitchers, hitters. It doesn't matter. So their bullpen has been an absolute disaster, but when you look at the fact that no starters can go beyond six innings, and that includes Gesellman, who the Mets were counting on this year and was supposed to be their fifth starter, now he's a guy, because of the injuries to Syndergaard, because Harvey hasn't pit himself, because Wheeler's on an innings limit, because DeGrom has been inconsistent with his out pitches and going high pitch counts where he's only able to go five innings, and because of Syndergaard's injury, Gesellman was a guy, and along with Matt's and Lugo's injury, Gesellman was a guy the Mets were counting on, and he has been flat-out awful. An ERA over 7, and he has now been moved to the bullpen there, skipping his starts. So, I mean, you tell me, Brian, what else can the Mets do right now to straighten up their starting staff?
I'll give you a simple question. Whatever happened to their closer, Jeru's Familia, as well in that blown-up Mets bullpen?
Yeah, well, he's the next problem, because then Familia gets hurt, and he has a shoulder clot, and he's out now till after the All-Star break and into August and September. So another thing that happens with the Mets is consistent injuries, and you see it in the starting staff. A staff that was supposed to be 7 deep is now pitching Tommy Malone, is now looking for other replacements to fill the void left by a staff that was supposed to be 7 deep. And that's the next problem we have here. Ray Ramirez, the trainer, has been with them since 2004. Every year, the Mets have these lingering injuries, and they're the same type of injuries. Arm pulls, lat pulls, stomach pulls. Juan Lagares always has some sort of a stomach muscle pull that leaves him out for a couple weeks. Lucas Duda always gets some sort of knee or ankle or hamstring pull. Cespedes has had hamstring pulls the last couple of years. Cabrera has had arm pulls, leg pulls. all these guys the same types of injuries year after year because of what? I mean, you tell me. How do you employ the same trainer when year after year you have these same types of mini annoying injuries that what happens is the Mets don't put them on the disabled list. Then they'll wind up playing with 21 guys and have two guys coming off the bench. And even though now there's a 7-day and 10-day DL, the Mets still don't put them on the DL. They'll play short, and then they'll put them into a game, and then they'll really injure themselves. So they'll have a minor injury. The Mets won't give them the proper rest they need to get better. Then they'll really hurt themselves like Syndergaard did, like Familia has, like Familia did, like Cespedes did, like Cabrera has done, and then they wind up being out for a long period of time. So you tell me, why after
why
they
are the
show...
Mets scared? Here's the question for you. Why are the Mets scared to change trainers when you see all of these injuries going on?
Exactly.
It's been happening, like you said, since 2004, and in some cases earlier than that. If you look at the history of the Mets, a history you know very well, they've always had these kind of injuries, even in their World Series year of 2015. They've always had these kind of injuries. Why don't they just face up to the fact that this trainer is not doing the job and get somebody in there that can keep them healthy and keep them on the field? I think the administration of the Mets is so scared to part with somebody that's been there since 2004 that they're willing to overlook everything that has happened to the Mets, in particular their pitching staff that carried them to the World Series in 2015, and seeing the end result of that with everybody going down.
Right. Absolutely. I totally agree with you, Brian. I mean, you have the flat-out case of consistent injuries and the same type of injuries happening every year, almost to the same players. And there's got to be a change. I mean, if it was me, and then this is the whole problem with the organization, okay? Starting with the Wilpons, who, let's face it, I've never liked the Wilpons. The whole thing with the Madoff thing has never sat well with me. They gave up on the fans. They gave up on a team for 5 years, spent no money, and treated the fans as morons, like they weren't rebuilding, like they weren't going to spend money. They never came out and said anything. They just robbed fans of their money, still paying high prices for minor league product year after year. So they finally get to the point where Alderson made a couple good trades. Now, I'm not going to say Alderson hasn't done things right. He's made a couple good trades. He's drafted a couple good guys. But a lot of these guys, DeGrom, Harvey, all these guys were guys that Manaea brought in and Manaea drafted. And he left the Mets with a lot of good pieces. It's just that they weren't ready yet. And since Alderson's been here, a lot of the guys that he drafted, starting with the Brandon Nemos and the Gavin Caccinis and the Dominic Smiths, the Michael Confortos, are guys that have ability but have not yet come up and proven it consistently. Where Alderson has really come through is some of the trades, getting Syndergaard for R.A. Dickey, getting Zach Wheeler for Carlos Beltran. But even those guys, yet you don't know enough about because they haven't consistently contributed yet. So where is Alderson's value? Because the one thing that Alderson does not do well, and that is provide the team with backups and options in the offseason, this guy never goes out and does what is necessary to make sure his team has depth. There are a multitude of middle relievers out there that the Mets could have signed to improve their bullpen, which everybody knows is lacking. Everybody knows they don't have enough depth. Hansel Robles is not good enough. Jerry Blevins is a guy who came off injuries. He's a left-handed specialist. Fernando Salas is a guy that's old. You saw last year that Familia and Addison Reed can be overworked. They needed to go out there and get a couple more quality middle relievers who were there to be taken, and they didn't. And they didn't.
The Mets are scared. Let's put it simply. The Mets are scared to go out and do what needs to be done to make them competitive again. And I can explain Addison Reed. Addison Reed played with the Chicago White Sox for 3 years, and he was our closer. But just like you said, he got overworked, and there were chinks in the armor, especially with his outpitch, if you go back to Game 5, which is his slider. His slider since that series, since the World Series of 2015, has been flat as a pancake, and it's always been hit since then, and it continues to get hit. May I reference Sunday's slam?
Yes, you may, but I'd rather you not. I mean, that ball is still going, I believe. But that's what you have. The funny thing we have here, Brian, is the Mets are now 7 games under .500. And what it turns into is it's supposed to be an MLB show, and it turns into a rant about the Mets. It was the same thing last week when I had Lenny Mullick on. But anyway.
Hey, you know what's fun, though? You do the same thing during football season when I have you on in the morning, which is fine with me. This is fun, man.
Yeah, it is. It is. It is fun. I'll say that. But here's the thing. The Mets lost 6 straight. They lost all 6 games on their road trip, and they had the lead in 5 of those games. And check this out. This was the first time since September 1999 that the Mets had a road trip of 6 games or longer and came away with no wins. Now, if you remember that September 1999 road trip, that almost eliminated them from the postseason. It was
Cooper
Jones.
And it took a game at Cincinnati for them to get into the postseason, and they went to the National League Championship Series where they lost in 6 games.
Yes, thanks to Kenny Rogers walking in Andrew Jones in a game the Mets were down 5-0 in the first inning and actually had the lead in the 8th inning and in the 10th inning. But thanks to John Franco, who was the first all-time blown save artist for the Mets as far as relievers who just couldn't get it done in crunch time. And then you had number 1B, which was Armando Benitez, not being able to close the deal in the 10th inning when the Mets got a lead, which both would have forced Game 7. And God knows what would have happened in Game 7 because the Braves didn't have anybody to go with, and neither, you know, it would have been a great Game 7.
You know the last consistent closer the Mets had and age just befell him? You should remember this name. Jesse Orozco.
No, I'm sorry. Jesse Orozco is not someone you could call a consistent closer. Okay, let's not get crazy here, Brian.
Right. I know. I'm just having fun with it, man. The point is this, with the Mets having so many injuries and not having the right people in place to get them back on the field, this mess is going to continue. The administration needs to look at the trainer and say, you know what, you served us well, but we can't compete with you here with all these injuries and everybody getting overworked and not having the right people in place, which goes back to part of the Mets administration, as you brought up earlier, you know, getting the right player, getting some depth. That's what's hurt the Mets. Depth,
exactly.
Or lack thereof.
Right. Now here's my plan to fix the Mets is for the short term.
Okay.
Okay? All right? You're still waiting for Mats and Lugo to come back, but I don't even know if they can count on him. Mats is a guy who has historically been injured, okay? And Lugo's a guy who's okay, but at the beginning of the season, people thought Gesellman was better than Lugo, and Gesellman's been an absolute disaster. So here's what I would do. They've already done the first thing, which was move Gesellman to the bullpen. Okay? The next thing that they got to do is forget about these guys on waiver wires, these useless veterans who are going to come in like the Adam Wilkes of the world, who the Mets, you know, started against the Florida, Miami, and he got rocked. Then he went to Minnesota and got rocked. And, you know, forget about the guys at AAA who have been around for years and are basically just hanging on to earn a paycheck. Guys like, Tyler Pillar's gotten off to a good start, but he's not a guy who's the answer. He's pitched in the major leagues. He's been in the minor leagues for a while. He's doing well in Las Vegas, but ultimately he's not going to be the answer. Guys like Logan Taylor, who has gotten chances in the major leagues, Rafael Montero, they are not the answer, okay? Where the Mets need to go is in AA, they have two guys, P.J. Conlon and Corey Oswalt. Both guys are in their early 20s. Both guys are doing very well at AA and are guys who should get a chance to start a few games for the Mets in the next couple weeks until Mats and Lugo come back. See how they do.
Okay, here's the counterpoint to that. Here's the counter question to that. If they come up and they start and they perform well while you're waiting for Mats and Lugo to come back, do you keep them?
Yes, you do. You keep them, and then what you do, I'm sorry, what you do if Matt Harvey doesn't get his head out of his ass, then you move Harvey.
Ain't that the truth?
I'm sorry. You move Harvey to the bullpen, and him and his ego,
yep.
Like Bill Parcells said, I'm certainly not concerned about the player's ego. If he's not strong enough to do what's best for the team, then he can go somewhere else and play. And they can trade his ass.
Exactly.
They can trade his ass to Texas or to Miami or, you know, give him to some team out west. Go give him to Milwaukee. Give him to just get rid of him.
stick him in Milwaukee for a while. Let's see how that turns out.
Yeah, because if he doesn't shape up before the All-Star break and start pitching well, he deserves the demotion. And if he can't accept it,
I wouldn't even wait to the All-Star break. You know what you do?
You're right.
You send him to the bullpen now. Make that. Well, you want to send a message. It's like you said a few moments ago. You want to send a message. All right. You can't get your head straight. You're going to the pen. If you don't like it, you're out of here. You got to make it simple because it's early enough in the season to recognize the problems and then rectify them.
Yeah, I agree that, but I would give him because he pitched okay yesterday. Diamondbacks are a good hitting team. He had problems with his pitch count, but I would give him two more starts. I'd say, Mr. Harvey, you have two more starts to get your head out of your ass. If you don't, you're going to the bullpen. If you don't like it, then your ass is going to be on the bench, and we might even send you down. So you got to deal with it, and then you're out of here at the trade deadline because we don't want you here, okay? If he doesn't shape up and he has to go to the bullpen, then at least you have a guy who can get outs for one inning in the late innings because the Mets are going to need a closer until Familia gets back. And to me, if Harvey can't hack it in the next couple starts, he to me would be a pretty good replacement for a one-inning guy to come in, throw some smoke, get guys out. I think he could do that, okay? But again, we're talking crazy here, all right? I would still much rather see him do the job as a starter, okay?
Right.
You have these younger guys come up. I think Conlin and Oswalt, if they bomb, they bomb. Then you put them back into major leagues, into minor leagues, let them get a couple more starts, you know, let them go. But really, what's the difference if you put them in Queens or if you put them in Vegas? If you put them in Vegas, their ERA is going to go up. They're going to lose confidence. So I don't see the point for two guys who are better prospects at AA and it's time for them to come up to the majors. They've had good starts so far this year in the minor leagues. They were guys that were on the Mets radar in spring training, okay? So give them their shot. Much better than letting their confidence get destroyed at AAA, and the Mets need them, okay? And then when Mats and Lugo come back, see how the other guys are doing, okay? If Wheeler is not getting consistent outs and still not going deep enough into games, then you say, all right, your innings limit is real. What we're going to do is we're not going to start you anymore. We're going to move you to the bullpen because nobody out there can get guys out right now. And the Hansel Robles of the world, the Fernando Salas of the world, those guys can hit the road because they've been absolute disasters and
they've been overused.
Terrible.
They've been absolutely terrible. And like you said, overuse is the biggest problem. They've been absolutely terrible. They've been getting rocked like crazy.
Right. And now the second thing I would do offensively, okay, when Cespedes comes back, Curtis Granderson, I'm sorry, goodbye. Granderson is either going to be on the bench or he's going to be a guy I'm looking to unload to a team that's looking for a veteran outfield. And Conforto is going to be my everyday center fielder because the kid can hit. Yeah, because the kid can hit. The next thing I do on June 1st, once he gets past his whatever the rule is for Super 5 players, Ahmed Rosario comes up. And he is my everyday starting shortstop. And as Drubal Cabrera becomes a guy that you either trade or you make a bench play.
Yeah.
Okay. Because
I think Azdrubal could be shipped out. I think Azdrubal could be shipped out.
I think he could be, but I still think he would be a valuable backup if he wants to be. If he doesn't want to be, he wants to be play every day, then ship him out and bring up a guy like Caccini or bring up a guy like Matt Reynolds, because the Mets have enough depth in the minor leagues at that position to satisfy if Cabrera doesn't want to go. They still have Reyes. They got TJ Rivera, who's had a very good year, a very good hitter.
Indeed.
Probably been their most consistent hitter outside of Conforto this year, and Jay Bruce.
Here's your next question. Who do you bring in as a trainer to prevent all these doggone injuries? And it's, like you said, Mark, it's the same kind of injuries the Mets have been having for 12 years.
Right. I mean, I don't know who the good trainers are, but I do know this, okay? If I was running that organization, there would be some sort of accountability, which there never is with the Mets, which drives me mad, okay? What's a 40 and slip right there, okay? Because you have no accountability anywhere, no accountability with Alderson, no accountability with Terry Collins, no accountability with the trainer. If guys are getting injured every year, something's got to change. And to me, Ramirez should be gone. The whole training staff should be gone. Everybody. From the guy who
should have been
ice.
Gone.
Yes,
should have been gone
out of the
when you first
noticed
the trend.
All these guys got to go. All these guys got to go. Okay? You bring in top-notch quality. I mean, you're in New York City for crying out loud. You have some of the greatest doctors and hospitals in the world. And, look, I have nothing against Ray Ramirez at all. I feel bad that I'm picking on the guy. I mean, he's not a – you know, I'm sure he's a good trainer. I'm sure he's – but for some reason – he's not preparing these guys well, because if you are prepared and if you are stretched, if you have the proper work, I mean, why in the world are Cespedes and Syndergaard going on weight programs to make them stronger? Why does Syndergaard need 17 pounds of muscle? You tell me. What is he going about?
That
Mr.
doesn't
Olympia?
Sound right.
You know, I mean,
that
why
doesn't
does
sound right at all.
Why does Cespedes need to be on a weight training program where he's deadlifting 990 pounds? You know, I mean, why in the world do you do that? In today's day and age, you want guys to be stretched. You want their arms and their legs and their hamstrings and their tendons to be stretched, to be healthy, to not have such muscle mass that when they fart, they pull a muscle. And it seems like that's what happens.
True as you are, it does seem strange that they're doing more muscle training and not more stretching of the muscles.
Exactly. I mean, Cespedes is strong enough. Syndergaard, you don't need to be a massive bodybuilder when you're a pitcher. Actually, it makes you worse. And it makes you more susceptible to injuries. The thing you want strong if you're a pitcher is your legs, not your arms. So anyway, but I think we wasted
enough
time.
Because as a pitcher, you drive through with your legs. Your legs bring you your most power when you follow through.
Exactly. I mean, just ask Nolan Ryan, to me, who had some of the biggest legs I've ever seen in my life, or Tom Seaver, guys who just had so strong. From their legs down. But anyway, now that we've wasted half the show talking about the Mets, let's get to some real teams. All right? I'm sick of this. All right? Let's start with this. Okay? Let's start with this. 13 years ago today, Major League Baseball history, Arizona Diamondbacks pitcher Randy Johnson threw the 17th perfect game in Major League history. Okay? At that time, 40 years old, 5-time Cy Young Award winner, broke a mark held by Cy Young, became the oldest pitcher to throw a perfect game. Young previously held the distinction, throwing one at 37 in 1904 for the Red Sox against the Philadelphia A's. Johnson struck out 13 that day, one shy of the record for a perfect game, which is held by Sandy Koufax, and it would later be matched by Matt Cain. Okay? So,
wow.
Here are some other notes from games the other day. Tyler Collins on the Detroit Tigers. I don't know if you know Tyler Collins.
Mm-hmm.
one of the guys that the Tigers are depending on this season. One of their younger guys for a Tiger team that is at 500, and most people thought were going to win or at least play well enough to be a playoff contender in the Central. Okay, Collins is 27 years old, been in the major leagues for about, this is his fourth year. A good bench player. Yesterday, he was involved in a 0-for-28 skid when he came up to the plate. He ended his skid with two homers last night, being the first player. I mean, talk about random notes. Stats Inc. tells us that he is the first player to enter the game or to have a streak where he was hitless in 30 at-bats and hit two home runs in a game. So I don't know how that's a stat, but it is. So Tyler Collins of Detroit broke his skid of 0-for-30. He was 0-for-28 going into the game, broke his skid of 0-for-30 with two home runs last night, and the Tigers 5-4 win over the Orioles. Now we look at a couple other teams, the Rangers, Texas Rangers, who at one point were forgotten about in the American League West. They were about seven games under 500. They were going nowhere thanks to the fact that the Houston Astros, with Major League Baseball's best record, are running away with the American
League
West.
Yeah, say that sentence again for the people that can't believe it.
Right. Well, I don't think anybody can't believe it because Houston, before the season, I think a lot of people thought Houston had the best lineup in the American League, maybe minus the Red Sox. But the Texas Rangers a couple weeks ago or last week were about 13 games out of first place. They were six games under 500. They have now won nine straight. They have moved to within 7.5 games of Houston, and they are only a half game back in a wild card. And they were talking about possibly holding a fire sale in Texas before that. Yu Darvish was one of the guys mentioned. A couple other guys that they had brought over as free agents before the season began. Mike Napoli, who has really struggled hitting 180. Roughneck Odor, who they gave a big contract to in the offseason. He was really struggling entering May. He's picked it up the last couple weeks. He's got his batting average back up to to 200 after not being, hitting around 160 for most of the season. So the Rangers are on their way back to being a contender in the American League. And they won their ninth straight today over the Phillies. And they are over 500 for the first time this year. Okay? Juan Segura for Seattle. Career-high 16-game hitting streak. Hitting .389 during the streak. A guy that Seattle acquired in the offseason from Milwaukee. Okay? A guy who most people never heard of. And most people was an afterthought in that trade. Segura has had a very good season so far for Seattle, even though Seattle has struggled a bit. He has a 16-game hitting streak, hitting .359 for the year, which is good enough for fifth in the majors and first in the American League. So leading the American League with a .359 batting average, now has a 16-game hitting streak for the Seattle Mariners.
Well, there's a team you need to watch in the West. Remember the charge Mariners, they made toward the end of the season when they fell one game short? There's a team you're going to have to watch.
Who, Seattle?
Seattle.
No, see, I don't think – I think, Brian, I think Seattle every year is a team that in the offseason they bring in guys, you think they're ready to make a move. And to be honest, Seattle's really struggled. They've had so many injuries this year. You look at their starting staff, everybody's gone down with an injury, from Felix Hernandez to Paxton to Drew Smyly.
And like we talked about earlier with the Mets, these are guys at the top of the rotation that the Mariners were counting on.
Right. And the Mariners, year after year, you think that they're going to compete. And you think that they're going to, you know, you look at the move. Mariners are active in the offseason. They bring in guys. They make moves. The problem is that they don't make the right moves. And no matter if it's bringing in Cano, bringing in Nelson Cruz, even going all the way back, you know, to 2003, 2004, when they would bring in guys. Who's the guy that they brought in who played for the Dodgers? Adrian Beltre. Going back to those guys, Seattle has never been able to get back to the point where they were in the early 2000s when they had Ichiro coming up, when they had Brett Boone. After A-Rod left, after Griffey left, no one thought they were going to be good. Won 116 games in 2001, wound up losing in the American League Championship Series. They haven't been the same since then. And they've tried. I'll give you that. Seattle does try. They do make moves, but they've been pretty unlucky with injuries. They've definitely this year they've been unlucky with injuries.
Yeah.
And with Houston in the American League West, you look at Houston, 29-12. Dallas Keuchel is back. He's a guy that won the Cy Young Award in 2015. He's been unhittable this year. 7-0.
Yeah, Dallas Keuchel has pitched angry.
Yeah, and not only that, but they have a very good bullpen. Ken Giles, Chris Davinsky, Will Harris, Michael Feliz, all guys with whips under 1.1, all guys who have high strikeout rates, who throw hard. Even a guy like Brad Peacock has had a great year, 15 innings pitched, 21 strikeouts. James Hoyt, a guy who has thrown in 8 innings, has struck out 18 batters. Okay, they have a lot of live arms in their bullpen, but that's not even the best part about their team. You look at that lineup, starting with Altuve. Correa has had a bit of an off year. He's still hitting .294, and he's coming on lately. Brian McGann, a guy who you know had a good career with the Braves, slumped a little with the Yankees. He's got 25 RBIs and leads the team. So, you know, George Springer, a relatively afterthought on that lineup, is second on a team with 24 RBIs, leads the team with 9 home runs. And then you still have Carlos Beltran. You still have Alex Bregman. You still have Aoki, who they signed in the offseason. So Josh Reddick, another move they made. So this is a team that's not going anywhere. They are going
to
stay where they are.
No, the Astros are going to be around for a while.
They're going
to
be around.
If you think about how they built their team, they built their team to compete for a while. This is a very scary lineup.
Exactly. And they're going to be good for a while. Now, the other thing I want to get your opinion on, okay, you look out west in the National League. You have what most people think are an upside-down division. The Giants, who have been the class of the league for the last 6-7 years, winning 3 World Series. At 17-25, they're kind of in the same category as the Mets are, also 9 games back. The Dodgers have been competitive, 23-18. Clay Bellinger has been an absolute vision, a guy who they didn't think was ready yet, but they brought him up. He's hit 308, got 7 homers, 21 RBIs in just 78 at-bats. Corey Seager has had a bit of an off year for him, only 286. They expect more from him, but I think he'll eventually pick it up. Justin Turner. Now, you want to talk about Mets that they gave up.
Goodness.
Guy, players that they gave up on. Justin Turner hitting .372. For the Dodgers, along with Daniel Murphy. Imagine if those two guys were still in the Mets lineup. Okay.
Wow.
And they just gave up on both of them. But he's had a great year. You look at Yasiel Puig, maybe not yet back to himself, but he's got 7 homers, 22 RBIs. Then you look at the pitching staff. Kershaw's been 7-2, .894 whip. Alex Wood has been very good, 4-0 with a 2.27 ERA, a whip just over 1. McCarthy is 3-1. He's kind of struggled a little bit with his ERA. Hyun-Ryu has a high ERA, a high WHIP, has been disappointing at 1-5. Kenley Jansen has been himself, absolutely dominating, 14.2 innings pitched, 28 strikeouts, only good enough for 17.2 strikeouts per 9 innings. Not that bad, would you say? Josh Steele has been excellent in the bullpen for them. So the Pedro Baez, the Dodgers have good live arms. They're not going anywhere. But to me, the real surprise has been the two teams at the top of the division. Last year, Arizona won the offseason sweepstakes. Then they had a horrible regular season because guys like Shelby Miller and Zach Greinke were awful. Now you look at this season, Greinke's been better, 5-2. Was inconsistent in his start yesterday against the Mets, came away with a no decision, but much better than he was last year. Shelby Miller has been okay, not the guy they traded for, but certainly not the disaster he was last year. Rodney's had an up-and-down year in the bullpen, has allowed 14 earned runs in 15 innings, so he's been not that good. But you look up, the Diamondbacks are in second place, and they have just a flat-out filthy offense. I mean, Goldschmidt is one of the best players in baseball. Brandon Drury is a guy that's coming on. He's going to be, to me, the next Chase Utley. Jake Lamb, a very good young hitter, has power, can hit for average. Yasmany Thomas, who they got from Cuba, is just starting to scratch the surface. Chris Owings, another good young player, 317, 5 homers, 24 RBIs. Their lineup just keeps going and going. David Peralta, another guy, 29 years old. AJ Pollock on the DL now. That guy's got a world of talent. I mean, these guys can hit. And if they get any type of pitching, you know, from the Patrick Corbins of the world, the Taiwan Walkers of the world, Robbie Ray, who's got a very live arm, but can't help but walk people, as he's already walked 26 people in 45 innings, which is actually down for him.
Yeah. How about that?
So, yeah. You know, and, but the good thing for them is they got this guy, Zach Godley, who's come up and pitched very well. 3 starts, 18 innings, only 4 earned runs, and walking just 9 while striking out 19. A guy that's bounced around in minor leagues for a few years. I don't really know if they're counting on him, but if they can get a couple of good starts from him and get Shelby Miller to be who they thought he was, Greinke to go back to the Cy Young Award pitcher he was, and Corbin and Robbie Ray to be good enough to give them 6 innings consistently, the Diamondbacks are going to be a team that will fight for the wild card because they flat out can hit. And if you saw the way that they beat up on the Mets had no chance. I mean, they went to extra innings in one game, but they were so overmatched. At no point did you ever think the Mets were going to win any of those games. So
because Arizona's lineup, like you said, is just that scary. It's just that it's just that dangerous. Everything begins and ends. You know, anyone who watches the Diamondbacks, it begins and ends with Goldschmidt. But now they have built an offense around him where they can just absolutely crush the ball. This is a good hitting team. And the scary part is they're getting better. They're getting hits in key situations. And if you look at how they have vaulted into the lead, they're in second place right now. What's the biggest thing Arizona has changed in terms of their offense? 2-out hits.
Yep. They have. You're right. 2-out hits. And I mean, and they score runs with 2 outs. And they don't leave men on base. You know, they've been incredibly consistent all year in scoring runs. Starting from the first week of the season, I remember watching this team saying, this team can really hit. And if they get any type of pitching, they are going to be very, very good. And I just, you know, you look at the the numbers they've put up so far. And you wonder, you know, how long they can keep these guys under wraps as far as being secrets. Chris Owings, AJ Pollock, you already know Goldsmith is a superstar. So before you know it, these guys are really going to be recognized as very good ball players, and the Diamondbacks hitting .284 runners in scoring position, 132 RBIs runners in scoring position. Runners on and two outs so far this year. The Diamondbacks are hitting very well, 54 RBIs. So they were getting the job done. And
the biggest thing. It's the biggest thing and the biggest lift to a team. If you can get two out hits and score runs with two outs, it just puts teams on more of a defensive going, man, we can't kill these guys. We can get the first two outs of an inning, but we can't get that third out because they put hits together. How many times this year, Mark, have you seen the Diamondbacks as a team with two outs in an inning when the whole morale is down? They just start stringing two out hits together, and the next thing you know, it's a 4 or 5 run inning, and you blink and it's like, wait a minute, didn't we just get the first two outs?
Mm-hmm. I mean, Arizona, they are hitting with two outs this year, the fifth best batting average in the majors at .263. 65 runs scored with two outs up there as far as one of the best in the National League. So they are getting the job done. The Nationals are another team who's getting the job done with two outs. The Astros lead the major leagues with runs scored and two outs. So, yeah, it's something that the better teams this year have done very well, and that's the ability to extend innings. And just when you think the inning's over, these guys jump up and bite you. And the Diamondbacks have been good at all year. Astros, Nationals, teams that are near the top of their division, which gets us to the Rockies, another team that when people started the season thought, this team isn't going to be very good. They can hit the ball, but they certainly aren't a team that we have to worry about in the National League. Because of all the other teams, because of the Dodgers, because of the Giants, because of the Cubs, because of the Nationals, the Rockies are a team that really are good hitting, but they are not good enough pitching. But the funny thing is, you look at the Rockies, the best road ERA in Major League Baseball right now, and as long as they get
Colorado,
yes. As long as they get pitching, and you know they're getting it on the road, and that's the biggest thing for them. You know, you're not going to pitch in Coors Field, but they're still good enough to win at Coors Field, as their record indicates. They're 13-10 at home, 13-5 on the road, which is the best road record in the National League. Only Houston is better at 15-6 in the major leagues, and a big part of that has been how they've been able to pitch. And then you look at a guy like Antonio Senzatella, okay? A guy who's a rookie, first year in the majors, 6-1, 1.16 whip, has been a vision for the Rockies this year, come out of nowhere, leads the staff with 6 wins, leads the majors with 6 wins. If they get that type of pitching, they're going to be right up there with the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers in the National League. And God knows if the Giants are ever going to come back into the fray. But now you have more teams to compete with. It's not just the Dodgers who have won the NL West 4 years in a row. Now you have the Diamondbacks and the Rockies, two teams that if they get any type of pitching, and the Diamondbacks, the Rockies, like the Diamondbacks, they got a pretty good bullpen. I mean, Greg Holland has been absolutely lights out. He's got 17 saves.
He's been
already.
Dynamite.
Yes.
He's been dynamite.
And you know how good he was with the Royals a couple of years ago. Jake McGee, another guy who's been very good so far, a hard thrower, 19 strikeouts in 15 innings. Adam Ottavino has been okay. Chris Rusin has been awesome. 2-0 with a 0.85 ERA whip. So the biggest thing, like we've talked about now, and the biggest change in Major League Baseball the last couple of years has been the ability to win games in the seventh and eighth innings because of the other team's bullpen. And if you got guys that can get people out, and if you have an offense like the Rockies do, you're going to win games. And especially if you have a closer like Colin to put the game to bed. And you look at
how put the game to bed dominantly. You know, think of how he's gotten people out. I mean, he just gets it and throws it. But if you notice, Mark, the last couple of weeks, he's come up with a very good off-speed out pitch. You know how I am about pitchers having an out pitch that would just bring them over the top. That out pitch is being developed right now as we speak, and if he really develops it and controls it, no one's going to hit him.
Yeah, and he's been good his whole career, but adding that off-speed out pitch, I mean, you've seen guys like Gagne when he was setting the record for most consecutive saves, Craig Kimbrell, guys who develop like a 20-mile-per-hour difference between their fastball and their changeup, just flat-out filthy. And I think Holland is in that category as far as being able to change his pitches and hide the fastball from the changeup. But you look at the top ERAs for the bullpen this year, and Arizona is right up there at 3.76, Colorado right behind them, 3.95, 10 and 11 in Major League Baseball. A big reason why they've been successful so far this year. Now, to me, Ryan, and we only got a couple minutes here, the biggest surprise in baseball so far this year has been the first-place team in the AL Central, which is the Minnesota Twins, 19-16.
Mm-hmm.
They lost 100 games last year. Let's remember that. And they've gotten nothing from Byron Buxton and very little from Brian Dozier, and they're still in first place. Irvin Santana has been absolutely incredible, 6-1. Only 23 hits allowed in 54 innings. Amazing so far this year. And their bullpen has been very good. Brandon Kinsler has got 10 saves. Craig Breslow has been very good with an ERA, with a whip just over 1. So they've gotten the job done as well. And I think another very underrated player, Miguel Sano, 10 homers, 30 RBIs for Minnesota. A team that no one gave a chance and thought would be
included
where they are.
But here's where we can close out. And you love throwing stats at me and I at you. Let me throw this at you. Do you know that entire division is only separated by 3.5 games, top to bottom?
You're right. Starting with
and
Minnesota,
here's the other thing.
Kansas City.
You know,
well, Kansas City's 5 games
about,
back. Yeah. First 4.
Well,
yeah.
Well, it's still only 5 games.
Only
5 games. Any team, including a young White Sox squad, can win that division. For a couple of days, the White Sox were in first place, but then, you know, they lost 6 in a row. Their pitching wasn't there, and they're being tested right now. This is a young White Sox team that is being tested. Remember, they got rid of Chris Sale. He's off to Boston. Jose Quintana's counted on to carry that pitching staff. Haven't done it as of yet. But the scary thing about this White Sox team is that, even though they've lost the first two to the Angels, if you look at them overall, A, they're still in the race, and B, they're starting to figure it out, especially at the plate. They got to start doing what the teams at the top of the other divisions are doing, and that's getting 2-out hits. They've left far too many runners on the bases in these past 10 days.
Yeah, I agree. And, we'll keep an eye on them as the season goes on. Brian, great having you on. Love talking to you, my brother. And hopefully we can do it again real soon. We'll be looking out for you in the new Snowman in the Morning show. That is it for us today. We'll see you next week.